So, Abner, you were telling me off air that the Pixel Watch 3 is going to be a bit of an upgrade in terms of like sizes available. And I know as someone
Absolutely.
who has two smartwatches of various sizes, I'd love to know what you think.
So at the start of the year, Damien, we reported that the Pixel Watch 3 would be available in two sizes, and we recently got confirmation that the bigger size will be 45 millimeters, and that should really address people's biggest complaint about the Pixel Watch design, which has been, I'd say, pretty much beloved. I don't think anybody doesn't like this circular design, this domed design since it launched, but it was just too small for people.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I can definitely see why people complain about that 41 millimeter size in that it doesn't give a great enough range of like opportunity for people who want a smartwatch. So you literally just have one choice. I guess that kind of simplifies the purchase process as well, though. So if you know straight away, I can deal with a 41 millimeter size watch. And to be fair, I'm over 6 foot tall. I have pretty normal size wrists, and I think it looks fine on my wrist, but I must admit, having tried other smartwatches, I think the traditional shape really helps it. Being rounded definitely makes up for the fact that it is a little bit smaller than the average smartwatch.
Yeah, I like smaller watches. I have smaller wrists. I just like tinier things. But at the same time, the screen size I feel like is small. I feel like it is noticeable in apps like Gmail. If you use that a lot, or Google Keep, it's just you don't see that much. And part of it is the bezels, because like the bezels are still
Yeah, they're
substantial
big bezels, yeah.
since that didn't change whatsoever between the first and second Pixel Watch. So I hope what's happening is that we get a bezel shrink at the same time as we get this new size. We expect the 41 millimeter to the small watch to remain at that the same size as always. So it'll be nice for people that we
I'm
have
ge I'm
really
guessing,
liked
like,
the
if you
small
say with
size.
the if the bezels shrink in size as well, then potentially that 41 millimeter size will be arguably bigger in that it has a larger screen based upon the form factor. Or is the 41
Hopefully.
millimeters, if correct me if I'm wrong, is the 41 millimeters from screen to screen, or is that the actual size of the chassis?
I feel like it's a chassis, it's a case in large parlance. I think it's the case, but they definitely have. I don't think anybody really mentions this spec, but there's an inch. I feel like there is an exact measurement, but I don't think it's displayed anywhere prominently at least.
Right. Yeah, I
But
mean,
yeah.
like you say, obviously having that extra screen real estate is going to make a huge difference for anyone who is now in. I would argue maybe not now. People maybe have the patience to do it. I'm personally of the opinion that if I want a smartwatch, I'm going to buy it in the next few weeks. But I guess some people are happy to wait. Are we looking at what, September release cycle for
Yeah,
September,
September,
October?
October. I wouldn't expect a change. Yeah, we wouldn't expect a change in terms of the launch cadence. But does going earlier help? Because okay, Google has historically targeted late September, early October. That's like a good month, a few weeks after the iPhone,
Yeah.
usually after the iPhone announcement. I think at the current schedule, it's all within the same time that and getting ready for the holidays. But do you think going earlier would help anybody, would help
Oh,
Google?
you brought up a really good point, I think, as someone who tests a fair few smartwatches. I think the Galaxy Watch has always kind of been seen as like the marquee product in Wear OS now that they've jumped back over from, I believe it was Tizen before. Like having the Galaxy Watch go first
And
is,
by a significant margin, it's mid-year,
yeah. I mean,
July.
having like 2 to 3 month lead time, or maybe it's 2 months, is it like July time? The Galaxy Watch kind of has a little bit of a head start on the Pixel Watch, but at the same time, I kind of agree that you could get ahead of you could get ahead of Samsung, but I don't know if Google are willing to do that in terms of like their hardware lineup, specifically with regards to Wear OS. Like the market leader for Android is always going to be the Galaxy Watch, even prior to it returning to Wear OS. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe something in and around that middle of the year phase, like when IO has the, obviously we've had the A series launch for a few years. I think maybe that could be a good opportunity for Google to have another product kind of positioned in the market so that it draws more attention to it. I know that the A series has always been like a bit of a, we've always considered it a bit of a budget banger. And it's one of those devices that really does shake up the middle of the year in terms of people who don't want to spend an exponential amount of money on a product. But I'd be fascinated to see what would happen if Google did kind of like overturn the table and just say, right, we're going to put the Pixel Watch out in and around the IO period alongside the A series and maybe sell it as a bundle, because
it would be significant. It would absolutely be a significant reset of their schedule. And I think the phone is the main product. It has always been the main product, and I don't think that's going to change. So if they do having separation between the phone and the watch, and just speaking for ourselves and reviewing all these things, it would kind of be nice if there were a separation, because the phone is the top tier product, and I would say the watch for us is right after. So having a separation would be very interesting, and would be a very interesting reset for Google's hardware strategy.
I mean, if you look into it in terms of, we're talking about hardware, that I know that there's potentially no real change in the chipset. I'm guessing it's going to still be based on, if we look at the cycle, it looks highly likely to be Qualcomm W5 series. So
I think that I would actually introduce the wrench I would introduce in this is, so there's actually been a number of Wear OS announcements. At MWC, we had the OnePlus 2 watch. OnePlus Watch 2.
OnePlus Watch 2, yeah.
Yes, Watch 2. And Google made a pretty big deal about Wear OS's hybrid chipset architecture and 100-hour battery life. And I think that's going to be the big thing for this year. This change is applicable to all Wear OS devices. And I would not be surprised if Samsung gets in on it. And once Samsung does, Google has to. So I think that's what we're going to start looking at, like a marquee spec for a flagship watch.
Yeah.
This 100 hours. We, of course, have to test it much more to see what that looks like, practically speaking.
I'm fascinated to see people stop charging.
I think people will still charge every night for safety.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I was about to say, I'm fascinated by the opportunity to have a Wear OS watch that lasts multiple days. I think the Galaxy Watch 5 Pro is about the only one. I haven't really tested the Watch 6 Classic as much as I'd like, but yeah, having a watch that you can wear for multiple days is actually the reason why I made the switch early this year to the Apple Watch Series 8 from the Pixel Watch. I have the first gen, so for me, the battery life was middling to okay to begin with, and then slowly over time, it deteriorated. And to be quite honest with you, I think I found more utility, even though I only use my Apple Watch without being connected to an actual device. I just use it for the fitness tracking features, and when it's not paired with a phone and constantly getting notifications and vibrations, then it lasts for multiple days. So yeah, I'd love to see Google really like put pressure on Samsung, because we need players in the space, especially with Fossil practically leaving.
It's Samsung's.
And devices not getting supported. I think TicWatch, I don't know what TicWatch are doing at this point in time. They've kind of rested their laurels a little bit. Yeah, it's fascinating to see what's going to happen with the Pixel Watch. I know that we're both aware that the sales figures were really impressive for a first gen product, but yeah, the 2016 design is probably holding it back quite a little bit at this point in time. So for people who want multiple sizes, at least they have the option now to find one that suits their wrist. If it doesn't fit their lifestyle, then fair enough, but I can completely understand why someone would be put off by the the first and second gen Pixel Watch, just because there is only one 41 millimeter option.
Mm-hmm. So the other thing reported is that Google is working on a new pair of Pixel Buds Pro 2, which is what we've been calling them. They've been at this for a while in terms of development, and it looks like we're getting closer to a launch. What's your earbuds of choice as of right?
My actual earbuds of choice for quite a while have been the Nothing Ear 2, surprisingly. Mm-hmm.
Cool case.
The sound tuning is genuinely incredible. If I'm being completely honest, I have the Pixel Buds Pro in my hand currently that the listener can't see, but I love the design of the Pixel Buds. I love that it's really nicely cohesive with Google's strategy in terms of their software and their hardware kind of things. That rounded corners, soft edges, the touch controls are incredible. But I just think there's just something for me that's lacking with the Pixel Buds. I know that we had that huge update late last year, but certain aspects of the Pixel Buds Pro particularly have kind of felt more to me like the 2020 Pixel Buds 1.5 or like a 1.1 edit.
Interesting.
I think they got rid of the ear fin, and I know that was that was very uncomfortable for some people, but I felt that, especially when you're doing like exercise or like lots of, if you're hiking, whatever it happens to be, they're keeping your ears really, really nicely. And I'd love to see Google's take on that stem style design.
Yeah.
The thing that's immediately clear to me whenever I use another pair of earbuds, the OnePlus Buds 2 Pro, I think they're called, another horrendously named product, but genuinely excellent audio quality. They're probably the best replica Apple AirPods Pro that I've ever tried in terms of like their overall shape, size, that kind of thing. But I just keep coming back to the Nothing Ear 2, because the sound quality, they've realized that style is part of the equation, but the sound profile of the first gen was genuinely pretty awful. And they listened to the critical feedback that they received, which was quite heavy from the audiophile community, and tuned it accordingly. And I think that's something that I hope Google can listen to, because if I'm being completely honest, I don't really think that the AirPods Pro have had the best audio experience. I mean, I'm sat here wearing Sennheiser HD 650s, which are like a £400, $400 pair of audiophile open back headphones. So I'm probably not the kind of person to ask, but in a pinch, I'll listen to podcasts on the AirPods Pro and I'll take calls, but I just love to see Google really push the boat out. If they have all this AI tech in the pipeline, then maybe we could see some sort of like AI tuning, like personalized AI EQ, that kind of thing. I know that having a custom EQ is fine, but for most people, they don't really know how to tune their headphones or their earbuds. So I'm really intrigued to see what happens with it. Because there's aspects of the Pixel Buds Pro that I really do love. The colors, the design is, for the most part, is good, like I said at the start of this massive tirade against them. But yeah, the pricing seems to be pretty on par with everybody else. And the carry case is the best. I love the carry case. Yes. The little egg is so good. The only downside is when I drop it, the AirPods go Pixel Buds. I keep calling them AirPods.
Yeah, they've had that much of an effect on the industry. Object. The case is absolutely a beautiful object to hold in the hand. So yeah, you bring up several good points there. So the earbud design versus a stem design. The Pixel Buds Pro, they are sizable objects in your ear. I was just reminded of this fact when I used the Pixel Buds A series recently. That is so much smaller, the A series, and in your ear, the difference is absolutely noticeable. It's the Pixel Buds Pro are big. They're big earbuds. That's without a doubt. And
they like definitely stick out quite a bit, don't they? Like they're heavy
for some people.
Yeah, I have incredibly large ears, so they look like tiny little ear piercings, like a little orange ear stud. But there's a lot of things to love about it, and I think Google's design is, I mean, like I said to you before, it feels very in keeping with the rest of the direction that they're headed with the Pixel series in general. I just would, I would love to see Google's take on it. I mean, does it mean that it's going to happen? Probably not. I'd be really fascinated to see what happens with the Pixel Buds Pro 2. I'm sure that a lot of people have huge wish lists for them. I thought the battery's pretty solid. I've had them for 2 years now, and I've used them fairly regularly. Like I said to you before, calls, podcasts are about as much as I use them for. But for listening to music, I'm always sticking with the Nothing Ear 2. But I'm impressed at how they've held up, because the first gen, so the 2020 Pixel Buds, I had so many issues with. I know they weren't necessarily touted as a pro product, but I had two replacements of those because of the Bluetooth connection issues, and that doesn't seem to be an issue with the Pro. So if they can just keep, I think that's kind of, I think even with the Pixel Watch, looking at the Pixel Buds Pro as well, it's Google's like that TikTok approach, or like slowly moving the needle. And I think a lot of companies would like almost wipe the slate clean. And I think they've kind of tried to, whereas they maybe don't do that with software products enough, they've kind of tried to iterate and improve. And you can see that now, what are we, 2016 since the first Pixel, of obviously the relaunch of Google's hardware efforts. I think we've slowly seen that they're learning from mistakes and improving year on year on year with their product lineups. So that's the other. So what I want to see. I just want to see some improvements of our complaints.
Yeah, I think that'd be make a solid update to these next Pixel Buds Pro.
I'll pose a question to you though, Abner. How would you feel if Google said, okay, we're going to do Pixel Buds Pro 2, and we're going to introduce our first, like, almost, I'm not going to say pro grade, but they're going to introduce an over-ear headphone.
Oh, man, I would love that. I would love to absolutely see that. But, yeah, so over-the-ear headphones, they, looking at the AirPods Max, they seem like a vanity project more than anything. I know Sonos is getting into over-the-ear headphones too, so it looks to be a space that the industry is moving towards even more. Building on what like Sony has absolutely, and Bose, what they've absolutely
dominated that space for so long. Yeah, I just find it fascinating that obviously the market is so huge that surely maybe it doesn't fit. I don't know, maybe over-ear headphones just don't, I mean, from an outside perspective, it doesn't look like it fits into Google's lineup as is. But then again, I didn't expect them to bring out another tablet. So, yeah, I'm really intrigued to see what happens. Like, if Pixel Buds Pro continue to be an impressive product, and I'm guessing we don't know sales figures, accurate sales figures, but it'd be really intriguing to see how many pairs of earbuds they've actually sold in the last, say, 2 years. Is it 2022, July 2022 when they were released? Well, that's gone so fast as well, to be quite honest.
Yeah, it's the software update. Like, I was not expecting last year's October software update whatsoever. It kind of reflects how the hardware platform still is capable of updates. And like, as we enter this new AI stuff, more capable hardware hopefully means more AI features. So we'll see where that goes.
Yeah, I think you bring up a good point as well, that like I kind of glossed over, that the Pixel Buds Pro have been updated and supported probably better than any other pair of in-ear earbuds I've ever heard of, in terms of like feature drops, improvements to the actual performance, all of those kind of things. I don't want to say unprecedented, but it seems like it might be unprecedented. I don't even think Apple supports its AirPods Pro as extensively as Google has added extra features, clear calling, whatever it happens to be. I'm guessing you could argue the opposite, that Apple or even Sony, for instance, they will send out a fully formed product out of the factory. But I think it's pretty impressive. I think it's pretty cool that they have done that. And obviously, it leaves the Pixel Buds Pro 2 on really good standing to take the ball and run with it. Well, that's kind of my feeling on it as someone who loves accessories anyway. So,
speaking of software and feature drops, we just had one earlier this week. Though I would arguably say it's part two of sorts with the one in January. which was unexpected. It was way out of cycle, and we were wondering whether there was even going to be one in March. But we now that we have two data points, it just seems that the January one was out of cycle one. So just to briefly recap, I think the most significant January stuff was Circle to Search coming to the Pixel 8 and 8 Pro, followed by the temperature sensor. Have you had much action with the temperature sensor?
I couldn't wax lyrical about temperature sensor. That's a wrong turn of phrase. I could complain about the temperature sensor for such a long time, but I understand that it feels very much like a remnant of that COVID era. And while I think it is a bit of a waste of time to most people, I think you probably could find there will be pockets of Pixel users out there who could find an actual use case for it. For me personally, I tried to use it measuring the temperature of my cup of tea probably the first week that I had the Pixel 8 Pro. And then since then, I tried it on a camera light, and the first time I did it, I had a heat gun, like one of those, I think they're LED heat guns, and it was completely off. So I don't know if software updates have fixed it. I'm glad that it doesn't take up too much space on the camera bar, because if it did, I would be so upset, because it is such a, it's worse than a niche product. It's so, you use it or you, 99.9% of us out there, we never would use it. You'd use it once for fun. Like, it's a little bit like a macro camera in some extent, where I feel like a dedicated macro lens is a waste of time, unless you have a dedicated mirrorless or DSLR. But on a smartphone, just use the ultra wide. I feel like this was one of those where it was like, we kind of developed a product with the temperature sensor because we thought the pandemic might last a bit longer, and now we're going to try and find a use case for it. So, no. Yeah. This is a really long way to say, I did not use the temperature sensor at all. It's a cool talking point, I guess.
Yeah. I don't use mine regularly either. And I don't have that much to say beyond. Now that Google put it on the 8 Pro and the leaks seem to suggest that the Pixel 9 Pro has it, I just want Google to maintain the consistency. If they're going to try something on the 8 Pro, I hope they're just going to keep at it rather than like making a one-off hardware feature. So if the leaks are accurate, it's going to return, and I'm all for Google consistency. So
I guess that's one way to think about it, because my personal thoughts was they were going to drop it. So that's kind of, I haven't been paying as close attention to the leaks as I probably should. But yeah, like, I guess we can find ways to use it. Maybe for a parent, you might use it, for instance, to check the temperature of one of your children if they're feeling not very well. But then if you're going to do that, I guess you would use a thermometer. You'd use a professional tool. Like, I don't know. Maybe in a pinch it's useful, like,
In a pinch, the best case. The mobile aspect of a mobile phone is like the biggest thing for that temperature sensor.
Hey, I suppose you could use it to check if another Pixel Tensor was overheating. So that's kind of useful.
But
maybe that's why they thought about
Absolutely,
it.
Absolutely,
but maybe they thought that it would be roaming gangs of people with overheating Pixels because of the Tensor processor, and that you could track the temperature that way. Oh, your phone's gonna overheat. Quick, get it in a bucket of ice.
Oh, that is hilarious. So yeah, those are the two big points of the January feature drop. And then we have the March one, which I don't know, is honestly a pretty quiet one.
It was very good for original Pixel Watch owners, though, right? They get a lot of features off the back.
That is the main point, even more so than Circle to Search on the Pixel 7 and 7 Pro, because for some reason the Pixel Fold is not getting it.
Like, do you think it'll ever get the Circle to Search? Surely it'll get it at some point.
Yeah, there's no hardware spec why. There's no hardware specifications reason why it shouldn't get it. and all the way to 7.8 shouldn't
get it. I wonder if it's to do with the actual screen, open screen.
Like with the Pixel Fold, yeah, that's the best theory that I've come up with in terms of why circle to search aren't being optimized for tablet displays yet. Maybe that's why, but really the Pixel 7.8, all Pixel 6 and up should have circle to search. That should be the goal, and I don't think that pacing it this way makes that much sense. Circle to search should be for everybody. It's not that, that it doesn't seem to be that intensive of a capability.
I wish it did. I mean, I've been using it a little bit more recently, and I think it's kind of for shopping and like finding out things on images or like a video, you take a screenshot and circle to search. I think that's really, really cool. The only downside is, I don't know if you're having the same problem as me, is I keep activating it by accident. Like, I'll grab my phone out of my pocket and I mean, I'm very bad in that I will like kind of hover over the gesture bar and then kind of swipe into things. And so I'm constantly activating it by accident. So it'd be really cool if you could kind of adjust the sensitivity.
I've absolutely felt this. And I remain of the opinion that making the gesture bar a button does not make sense. I think it's too small a touch target. It's not a button. It doesn't scream button to anybody. So, but that is what it is. My main circle to search usage has been optical character recognition or copying text. It's still taking me a while to get off my previous method, which was using the recents multitasking menu and selecting text there. But circle to search is absolutely a better solution than the recents menu. So that's my primary usage, and that's my primary usage for it. A simple tool.
Yeah, I think it's one of those like. I think the biggest thing with like the feature drop, and I've said like a lot there, it's all of this added value in that these are things that I hope Google continues to do with their software updates, is just add extra value to what is an already clean software experience. And that like having even little things, like I really love the, obviously I'm constantly pairing between the Pixel Buds Pro and the Nothing Ear 2 and then other devices in the house, like having that headphone pairing, the fast option is, it didn't feel like it would be much of a change, but it just means I can just double tap. I'm tapping the Bluetooth menu, I tap again, and I'm connected to something else. And I love that. Circle to search, obviously being probably one of the big headline additions, but there's a little bit extra there that I'm guessing we saw in the QPR updates. I'm guessing from our perspective, it feels like it's a constant deluge of stuff. But if you're not updating your phone every single month when there's a developer preview, this feels like they'll feel a lot bigger, I'm guessing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, little I think the QPR2 was a bigger update in that regard. Like the Bluetooth in quick settings, that being a panel is, whoa, it should have always been there with the internet Wi-Fi thing. But yeah, that's like my big usability change of this release. And I'm surprised that Google didn't really highlight it. In the feature drop, it's an Android feature, true and true, but Google sometimes highlights Android features in feature drops. The most recent example being the single screen sharing. The Bluetooth should have taken center stage there in terms of like such a big quality of life improvement that saves you a few seconds every day. And that should have been topic of big discussion. So in terms of discussion, so again, we said at the top that there was a January feature drop and there was a March feature drop. Do you think Google, so basically the January feature drop was basically Google having features ready to announce, and with the temperature sensor and circle to search as driven by Samsung's launch. Was it better that Google just released the features when they were ready, or would have holding it until March made for a more cohesive announcement, a bigger feature drop?
Yeah, I think you've kind of nailed it. I do think having everything released in one go kind of creates hype. But then we get into the discussion of, is Google hampering its own hampering its own growth of the Android system, because they have done things with Pixel, like where the hell is Zoom Enhance? Like mm-hmm. holding things back is fine if things are half baked, but if they're announced alongside a product and then it takes so long to arrive, like that's a negative. That's a net negative. And I think as Google kind of claws away at market share and is trying to gain the favor of people who wouldn't necessarily look at their product lineup maybe in years gone by, then I do feel like you should have every feature should come at when you say it's going to come. So I can understand the fragmented argument, but I also understand that if it's ready, just put it live. But how fascinating would it be if Google just drip fed if they didn't do feature drops, if they just did, say it took a week to fully polish something that has been in the works for a year. If they just said 52 weeks of the year, we're going to release one new feature for the phone. I think that would be incredible. I think that would be absolutely incredible.
It would be
exciting. Oh, that'd be so cool. That would be so cool. But then the feature drop system it works. I think it does generate hype and people get really excited. And obviously I see that when I upload a video, people really want to talk about products and services, but software is probably still king in terms of like you use it every single day, you interact with it every single day, and if something changes and it makes your life worse, you're going to complain about it. If something's coming along and it fixes a problem that you perceive to be a big deal, then you're going to talk about it. Yeah, I don't know. It's all fascinating. I like the idea of one per week. That would be absolutely amazing. But I kind
it'll
of
be too- might be too much for more average users saying like, oh, yeah, probably. We can do this now. It's
yeah, suddenly it would be interesting. Suddenly a button's all the way over the side of the screen.
Yeah. Oh, it would be fun though. That's undeniable. It would be fun.
But to actually answer your question, Avner, I do think that the way they did it doesn't make sense in terms of like cohesiveness and keeping everything together. But in terms of like actually releasing it when it's ready, yes, it does make sense. I do prefer that. In a lot of ways.
So again, that's a feature drop. The Pixel, again, the first Pixel Watch, that if you still own that, this was a big update. No question about it. I know some Pixel Watch 2 owners were feeling a bit left out. Yeah, I agree. Honestly, there's like quite a few things in waiting for the Pixel Watch 2.
Yeah.
Material U theming, this vibration, a vibration feature that can tell you the time using a series of taps. That's been something we've been watching. But yeah, I thought we would get those Pixel Watch 2 features by now, but not yet.
Yeah, I mean, I'm like we've just said, I could imagine it being like a June feature drop thing, like probably reiterated at I/O or something like that, and then suddenly dropped in June. And that's so disappointing if you're a Pixel Watch 2 owner, isn't it? When you think about it, you buy the product in October, say it arrives, I don't know, the first few weeks of the month, whatever it happens to be, and then 6 months down the line you're finally getting things that were promised to you, say in January or whatever it happens to be. Like
just more broadly, this, like you were saying, this with the Zoom Enhance, this expectation setting, and this is genuinely a big issue in terms of you announce something, you pre-announce something to build hype, or you hold back until it's ready, which is like I would say the Apple philosophy to things, waiting until something's polished, or do you build that hype, or do you get people excited to get the phone now and expect it, this feature like Zoom Enhance a little bit later. It's a real challenge in terms of how you do it, honestly.
Yeah, I think it feels like a rug pull to an extent, because you buy the product on the promise of new features, and I would always say to people, never do that. But at the same time, like, there is, to be quite honest, Google has normally followed through with promises for their hardware lineups. There's a few key omissions there, obviously. Like Zoom Enhance is the most recent example, but We had Face Unlock potentially arriving on Pixel 6 Pro, and I know that wasn't technically announced, but
there was
hints that it was going to be a thing,
and that phone needed it.
There's definitely, I think maybe it's just the comms side of things. Like, having a great idea is one thing, but the communication to put that across and be like, okay, we're working on this and we're working on that, is fine. But there is definitely seems to be a disconnect between what we're being told ahead of time in terms of the product keynote, and then 6 months down the line, we're still waiting on certain features potentially. I never really thought about that, about the second gen Pixel Watch, but when you now have what is almost feature parity with the first gen, is that going to, you're probably thinking to yourself, well, I've got better battery life and I've had these features that were exclusive, and now I have just better battery life. I have the same hardware, the same screen, the same software, the same accessory ecosystem. Like, what have I really bought into here with the second gen product? Like, that must leave a bitter taste in the mouth a little bit.
Especially if you decided to upgrade. And I think the Pixel Watch 1 was a device that had, getting a newer version was an easy sell, I think, in terms of just like leaving it for a year. It was a first generation product. But at the same time, it looked like it was in development for quite some time, and an update was needed. The Pixel Watch.
Well, that actually makes me think a little bit about how Google is going to position the next gen, but also if they're going to do something similar to what they did with the Pixel Pass. Was it Pixel Pass previously? Mm. Like, are they going to potentially bring that back in another name? And that kind of makes sense with Google One adding certain features and certain extras to the package of the last few weeks. Is that something that you think? I'd be fascinated to hear what you think about with regard to Google One moving forward. Is it going to be this catch-all subscription service with the fact that it's adding things here and there? And I know that
just this week.
Fitbit Premium is like a core component of Pixel Watch, so like, it makes sense if you're a Pixel Watch owner, you would now. I know, is it UK only right at the moment?
Yeah, it's UK only.
So I can go and subscribe to a higher tier of Google One today and potentially get extra Fitbit features on my Pixel Watch.
Yeah, it's so the news is that a Fitbit Premium, which in the US is $9.99 per month or $79.99 per year, is now included in the Google One 2 terabyte and up plans. Additionally, Nest Aware, which gives you more video history, is now also part of Google One. This is starting in the UK. Google's not making any other availability announcements beyond the UK, which is an interesting strategy.
Yeah, that's fascinating that we get it first, because the UK is normally way down the line as an English-speaking country. You think you would get things day one like the US, but
there's always tiering. But yeah, this makes, if you're in the Google hardware ecosystem, which Fitbit and Nest Cams, like, this makes Google One much more attractive. Like the Fitbit Premium subscription, like, you do get a few months trial with every new device you buy. Notably, it's tied to the device instead of your account. If you previously had a Fitbit Premium trial, basically, you always get a new one with a new device, and that's always been nice. But I don't think it's worth $9.99 per month standalone or $80 a year. Again, this price was a carryover from when Fitbit was an independent company, so it made sense for them to offer a subscription this cost, at this pretty standard cost for a subscription. But I don't think the value was ever significantly there.
I mean, from the outside looking in, as someone who already subscribes to Google One, like, I kind of chop and change my tier quite a bit. And here's an actual life hack for anyone out there who's listening who uses Google One. If you're going to buy a Google product, up your subscription tier for the month just before you make your purchase from the Google Store, or before you make a purchase from the Google Store, and get that money in cash back.
Absolutely.
That's a little thing that I do quite regularly if I do make a purchase from the Google Store, which I've done recently, and it can save you a shed lot of like a lot of money. But
it's pretty good.
The idea of potentially subscribing to the 2 terabyte consistently to get Google One, obviously 2 terabytes of cloud storage. I have a Nest Aware anyway, which I pay up front. I think that's 50. Mm-hmm. I think it went up recently to £60 here in the UK.
It did
for the
yes.
tier. So I have 3 or 4 Nest cameras in my house on the outside. So that alone makes Google One more enticing. Those two join together, and then Fitbit Premium on top. Like, I don't wear my Pixel Watch very often, but if I did every day, then, or if I do happen to go out and buy the Pixel Watch 3 when that arrives, that's kind of an enticing prospect. Like, it seems to me like Google is shifting everything towards this. Like, I love the idea of a catch-all Google One. The clue is in the name of the product. Google One. It can literally be every service. If they started adding tiers and extra tiers and were like, okay, you want Google One with YouTube Premium? You want Google One with YouTube Music? Count me in. I think that's the best way to do it. And I know it replicates. Is it Apple Plus? The Apple Plus?
Apple One. It's also Apple One.
Apple One. Okay, right. Yeah, that shows how much attention I pay to Apple side of things. But the idea of having all of these, because Google's features, Google's like product lineup is really vast, isn't it? Video streaming. Mm-hmm. Obviously, mm-hmm. Fitbit with fitness. They have the online storage. The option to have a VPN service, which you would argue that another VPN, a third-party VPN, might be better. Music with YouTube Music. I think there's five really key products there that if Google really, really wanted to integrate into one package, people would pay. Now you throw in the option of like the Gemini tiers and throw those in. Because I know
The AI Premium is $10. It's double the 2 terabyte tier.
Yeah.
And that adoption of that has been, so right now everybody has a 2-month free trial, and it's interesting how Google has been positioning it as like a beta period of sorts, to like just get people to build to subscribe and make a call in 2 months whether you want to keep it. Interesting strategy as they add new features, but I think it's like looking to be a hard sell. For most people, like, they'll obviously take the trial, but after that, I'm not sure if they're going to keep it up for Gemini Advanced, which has the latest Gemini 1.0 Ultra model. Personally, I've been using the Gemini features in Google Workspace more, in Google Docs, in Gmail. I've been using that a bit more than the Gemini app. At the future episodes, absolutely going to talk about the branding for all these products. But yeah, I've been using the Workspace stuff more than the Gemini chatbot, I guess. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And I don't think not $10 double is, I don't think most people are going to subscribe to that once they actually have to pay for it. So I'm very curious to see what happens between now and when the trial ends in terms of Google adding more features.
Yeah, I can't honestly, I haven't really been using AI as much as probably I should. I feel like it could be better integrated. I know that it's integrated into certain products, like you said, with Workspace and stuff, which is kind of good, but it just feels like a little bit better than, and not always better in every case, like slightly different version of what we've seen with these early machine learning functionality, like smart reply, those kind of things. Like,
mm-hmm.
I'm not blown away particularly by anything that I've seen thus far, apart from I've asked a few times if I've written a script or I've written a post, and I'm like, can you just kind of check this for me? Maybe change this to add a little bit extra flavor, whatever it happens to be. Like, that's kind of useful. But then again, I guess. It's supplementary. It's not like the core. It feels very much like if you're going to pay for it, you're going to pay for it. And then
these AI tools, I think they most right now, like, again, I said my usage in Gemini is more in the Workspace apps. I think productivity is the biggest use case. And in that sense, it's like you have to use it with your work apps on your, like, whatever your company gives you. I think that's the biggest sell right now versus like a chatbot use or personal usage. And maybe the functionality is not there yet. Or I don't know. I don't think the Gemini chatbot use case is really for an individual, that useful in your personal life. Yeah,
I feel like maybe for an individual, no, but like you probably pose a good point there in that, say you're a workspace admin, say you deployed a load of people, PCs or whatever. I'm guessing if they bundled in Gemini to, say, automate certain levels of emails or automate certain spreadsheets and stuff like that, those kind of things probably would be useful for a big corporation or even smaller businesses to pay for. I personally, I'm not really seeing the utility as much as an individual. It's good for maybe getting an idea of something or a concept, but I've just, at the same time, the fact that all of these LLMs hallucinate makes me worry that the information I've received is not always true to what it probably should be. And yeah, like as part of a Google One subscription, if it was, say, an extra, I don't know, $5, £5.
That makes more sense than Apple.
Yeah, like I think it makes more sense. Like doubling the price seems a bit weird. And then also the strange aspect is it of obviously adding new features to Google One for UK users. I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to work out that potentially that might happen in more regions. Maybe it's a test market because maybe a lot of people in the UK use Google One. I don't know. I don't know what the figures look like, but I know a lot of my friends use Google One. I know that's anecdotal.
For storage.
I use it for, a lot of my family members use, we all use Google Photos to back things up. So having extra Google Photos storage for, say, £2 to £3 a month is worth 100 gigabytes of photos is a lot. So
absolutely.
Yeah, like I'm intrigued to see what happens next. I might try it out. I might go literally after we've recorded this and upgrade to the 2 terabyte tier. Because previously, that the only reason I would want to do that is to get the VPN, but now that's included in every single subscription tier, it seems.
Which was an aggressive move when it happened.
Yeah, like it seems like slowly building up Google One makes sense, like as in a revenue stream for Google. But I think it's fascinating. It's fascinating to talk about. I know that a lot of people out there will probably be really, really interested in it. If you want to carry on the discussion, by all means, you can contact us on 95google.com, whatever it happens to be. This is Pixelated, a brand new podcast from myself, Damien Wild, and Abner Lee at 95google. We want to have you all interacting with us. We want this to be one of the best Google-related podcasts on the internet. So, yeah, subscribe for more. And hopefully you enjoyed this first episode.
And we'll see you next week.